Welcome back to the second hour of 2 hours of Jewish Soul, this November 13th program of 1994. Hanukkah is just 2 weeks away, and I hope you're getting prepared. Well, this past week I received a phone call from a friend, Cantor Meir Devere from Fairlawn, and he told me that a certain very famous cantor was in from Israel, Cantor Shmuel Taube. And I had the pleasure of meeting Cantor Taube with Mayor in Teaneck on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, I had the pleasure of interviewing Cantor Taube. And so this hour is devoted to his wonderful recordings and a very, very interesting, or what I hope you'll find a very interesting conversation, interview that we had. So before we begin the interview, let me play a recording of Cantor Shmuel Taube, Sim Shalom, and after our conversation, we'll hear more of this excellent, famous cantor.
Here.
Very pleased to have with me Cantor Shmuel Taube, who is in from Israel. Good evening, Cantor Taube.
Good evening, Charlie.
You came in from Israel just a few days ago.
We came in 2 weeks ago from Israel, actually to Montreal. In Montreal, we were invited, my wife and I, because we lived in Montreal 12 years, and I was the chazan of the congregation Bet Ora, and the congregation celebrated this year the 40th year of their foundation, and they had several affairs going on during the year, and the last event of the year was taking place the 25th of October, and that was the concert of all the chazanim who were in this congregation, and I was the first cousin of this congregation, Betora, in Montreal, and we performed Tuesday, the 25th of October, with myself and Paul Kowalski, who is now in Toronto, and Pinchas Rabinovich, who is now in Los Angeles, and Arya Subar, who is the actual chazan in this congregation now.
That must have been an exciting experience for all the cantors from the past and present to be together. For my listeners who are not familiar with you, why don't you take us a little bit back into history. First of all, where were you born?
I was born in Poland, and at the age of 12, my family came to Austria, and my father was a chazan shochet in a small congregation, one of the Shevi Kehilot. People in the know the Shevi Kehilot, not far from Vienna, and this Kehila was called Lattenbach. And then when I finished school there, I went to the yeshiva of Mattersdorf, and I learned the Mattersdorf 6 years, and after the yeshiva, and my voice started coming, and actually the voice is in our family, as far as I know, four generations. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, my father was born in a town in Poland called Warta, on Yiddish they call it the Wurt, not far from Lodz. There he was a chazan shochet, and I still remember him when I was a little boy. From this town also was born Chazan Adolf Kaczko, who also sang in the choir of my grandfather, who was then called Reb Yoni Shochet.
I have many of Kaczko's recordings, although I don't play them that frequently. But
but he is known in the world of Chazanut in New York and in the world. He was a very great musician. And then... I will make it shorter. I ended up in France at the age of 21.
In Paris?
I was in France.
Uh-huh.
Was also cantor. I became a cantor. First, I was Hasen. My first job as a Hasen was in Vienna, in the Schule Montefiore. Schule is also a little schule, but very, very known. And this schule was also Hasen Yehuda Mandel, who is also well known in the Hasidic world, especially amongst the cantors' assembly. He passed away not so very long ago in Philadelphia. A wonderful man who was the Hasen in that shul, and then he was Hasen later on in Budapest, in the Rombach Temple.
Aha.
Yeah. And from there, from Vienna, I went to France and became Hasen of the shul, Rue de Montevideo, also a very, very known Orthodox shul. And then the Shoah, the war, the Hitler came to power already before, in 1933, and I'm talking now of the year 1936.
Was when you were in Paris, 36?
When I came to France.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you were there during the Holocaust.
Yeah, and during the whole, then the war came and my parents came to France, and the war came and in 1943, in October the 10th, it was Hoshana Rabbah, October the 10th, I was arrested by the Germans and sent to, first to this, for a few weeks, to Drancy, near Paris, where all the Jews of France who were arrested were sent there and selected and sent to, with transport every week, a transport from 1,000 to 1,500 people to Auschwitz, and I was deported in the beginning of November 1943 to Auschwitz, and I was liberated in May 1945.
Wow.
Because by the end of the war, I was in Germany in a camp, but really with the help of God, what saved my life, that I was a singer there, not a Hasen, not even once I could sing Hasanut, or Yiddish, or whatsoever. I only sang in German because I went to school in German, and I know German well, and also French, and a little bit of Italian. So I sang sentimental songs and opera arias also. We had a small orchestra even.
Wow.
And that what helped to save my life.
Wow, that must have been some experience. Oh.
Yeah, especially there are certain songs here, the Germans are very sentimental, and songs, the songs by Franz Lehár, and so on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, after the war, you eventually got to...
I was liberated to Sweden. By the end, we arrived a few days before the war ended. I arrived. My wife came from... she wasn't my wife then. My wife is Hungarian, and she lived in Holland during the war, and she was arrested in Amsterdam and sent to Ravensbrück, a very infamous camp in Westerbork. She was sent to Ravensbrück from Westerbork, Holland, and then they all were liberated by the end of the war through Volker Bernadotte, who was the president of the International Red Cross, and he negotiated Himmler and mainly to liberate the women, but some men also were liberated, and I was amongst the some men. And we stayed in Sweden about 2-3 months to recuperate with the help of the Swedish government, but the last day before we returned to France, yeah, and then I got married. I wasn't married yet. Then went back to France in July 1945, I discovered we went through Göteborg, which is the second biggest town in Sweden, where the ships, the boats, the luxury boats left. So together with a friend of mine who was also a singer, I told him, let's find a synagogue, and I found a synagogue there. And they connected me there with the rabbi, And when I told the rabbi that I'm a chazan, he said, come right up, because they were looking for a cantor there.
Uh-huh.
The previous cantor was called Chachtel. Maybe people in the know. The chazan of Gothenburg was once Bear, famous composer Bear, who wrote a very large book of all the nuschaot of the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And he was once chazan in Gothenburg. And on the original book, it was reprinted here by the Sacred Press. The picture of the synagogue was there, is there on the first. And in this synagogue, I became the chazan. Not right away, because they heard me singing on Shabbat. I conducted, and they wanted me to be the chazan right away. I said, thank you very much. It's very, very nice, but my parents and family are waiting me in France. So I went back to France. And then they sent for me, they sent me tickets and everything. And in November 1945, I went to Sweden to become the chazan in Gothenburg.
In Sweden?
In Sweden.
Wow, I didn't know that. For how long were you in Sweden?
I was there a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
I got married there. I found my wife there. And we got married. And then I saw this is not a place where I want to be. And I decided to go back to Paris. They corresponded to me. They wanted me in Paris, but not in the same congregation as I was before the war. It was a different congregation. There was a lot of refugees in those times in Paris. And I stayed there for 2 years. And in 1949, they heard me and they wanted me in London. I became a chazan in London with the United Synagogue. They had many synagogues, many chazanim at those days, but it was after the war. And first I was chazan in a shul in the street, Poets Road, where before me was chazan Yakov Kosovitsky, who just left before I came. And a year later, I became the chazan in the Hendon Synagogue after David Kosovitsky, who left it in the end of 49, I think he left for the United States and became a chazan in Brooklyn in the Emanuel Temple, where he stayed all his life till he passed away in New York. And then I decided also through Wallach, this famous manager, Yoshua Wallach in New York. People remember, still remember him. He brought a lot of chazon to America, including the Kosovitskis. And he heard me through a recording, and he brought me to Washington, D.C., and I became the chazan of the Beit Sholem Synagogue, where before me was chazan Sholem Katz, and then Chaitovsky, who is now in Philadelphia. And then, 5 years later, in 1963, I went to Montreal, to the congregation Betora I mentioned before, and there we stayed to the end of 1975, and all my children except my oldest son was born in Paris, the two other children were born in London, and thank God we went to Israel, the two of our children were already there before. And the middle one came together with us, and the others were married, and he married right that year in Israel. And thank God, and we have all our grandchildren, Blianora, were born in Israel. In Baruch Hashem, we are very, very happy there, and I love Israel. And
you've been in Israel since 1975.
By the end of November 75. So this is just 19 years. Yesterday it was 19 years. The 9th of November.
Now, have you been singing in Israel?
I was singing not professionally, but 10 years later, 10 years ago, 9 years ago, a school of Chazanut was founded in Tel Aviv with the help of Chich This is Shlomo Lahat, the mayor of Tel Aviv, and Chaim Wiener, who now resides in Florida. The Chazunenwelt knows him very well.
I'm sorry, oh, he's in Florida, yes, yes.
Yeah, and uh-huh. I became one of the teachers there, together with Yitzchak Eshel, and Naftali Herstig, and Eli Yaffe, who was the director, the musical director of the school the first few years. And it was quite successful. We produced a few very fine chazonim, and including Yisrael Rand, and Barzilai, who is now in Vienna, and so it's not directed to gear to teach chazonim from abroad, but even from Moscow, or Lenny, I don't remember now, it was Moscow, I think in Moscow, the chazon of the big shul, a young man, came to Israel for 2 years, and I taught him individually in the school, naturally.
Uh-huh. In Tel Aviv?
No, yeah, the school is in Tel Aviv, but right. He went back to Moscow, and the other chazonim, one or two from Germany, and from all over, we have about 50 students. Not all have great talents, but some of them wanted just to improve their way of davening, not to be professional chazonim or to daven Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. There's quite a big number of chazanim and balat pilot who travel abroad, like to Germany, and to England, and the United States, and to South America, in South America, where Moshe Stern davened there for many, many years. The Moshe Stern, the famous Moshe Stern, was the chazan in Temple Bethel in Brooklyn. And he lives in Israel. And there are some very fine chazanim in Israel, like Chaim Adler, and
you mentioned Herstik and Rand, and of course
two brothers Rand. One is in Cape Town, the other one is in Ramat Gan, but he davened in New York this year for the high holidays.
How would you describe generally the situation of chazonis in Israel?
I would say, generally speaking, it's the same situation as in the United States. Unfortunately, the Jewish life is different today than it used to be. The Orthodox world organized themselves not in big synagogues, but in smaller shuls, where many of them cannot afford to have a chazan. And not only because they can't afford the system, you have to understand that the very, very religious people, like Hasidim, and these people never had a chazan. Chazonim were generally in big synagogues, even in Poland and Russia. I mean, I came originally from a Hasidic stock. My grandfather davened the whole week in a shtibl, Ger shtibl. But Shabbat, he davened in the shul of the town. And in the shul, they davened Nusach Ashkenaz, he was a chazan, and the shtibl davened Nusach Svat. But every town in Poland, especially the greater synagogues, they had chazonim, and some of them had choirs, and not to speak of Warsaw and Lodz, who had very great cantors and choirs, like the Kusowicki.
Sirota, yeah.
Was chazan in Lodz, and Moshe was chazan in Warsaw, and it was a different system. And since the Shoah, everything has changed. The same is in Hungary. You visited Hungary 3 years ago, it's Nebuch a Horban. They have one synagogue in Budapest, the Tabak Temple. They have the synagogue where Kvartin was once the chazan. And they still have the organ choir, but the attendance is 100 people, 150 people on Shabbat, with a lot of tourists in them. And the Orthodox shul, the bigger shul, those days seemed to be big. And I looked at it, now it seems smaller after I have been living in the United States. It's closed. It needs dilapidated. The whole area there is called the ghetto. The Rombach Temple has completely disappeared and destroyed, and it is some other buildings are there.
In Hungary?
Yeah. And the other towns, there isn't one town in all over. I was in Debrecen, there isn't even one town all over Hungary. Some of the shoes still stand. Naftali Hashtag told me he was there also singing. And it's one of the most beautiful synagogues in the whole world. I can't remember now the name. But there are very, very, very few people in the provinces in Hungary where before the war all this was flourishing, with mostly of them Russian Hazaren who emigrated to Hungary, like Kvartin, who came from Hungary, Linetsky and Abramson was the only Hungarian Hazan. And the Hungarian Hazunim are also very great Hazunim. I want you to know, Charlie, that I liked the way the Nusach, the especially Nusach Hatfila of the High Holidays, they're wonderful. At this year, I'm not performing, I don't like the word performing, I don't daven Shoshonim Kippur for different reasons. And I daven Rosh Hashanah in Yerushalayim. We stay in a hotel in daven Yishur. And Naftali Hashtag is a great cousin. The service is just beautiful, and the choir is unbelievably good, better than good. It is Eli Yaffe, who is now in New York, and he's performing next Sunday a big concert.
Yes, with Naftali Hashtag.
I hope.
Yes.
Yeah. So he is conducting the choir. Let me tell you something fantastic. He accompanies the chazan. You never heard anything like it, like an organ. And they gave me the honor there the last few years.
This is at the Hechel Shlomo?
This is Hechel Shlomo.
Right.
Wonderful. It's one of the most beautiful synagogues in the whole world today. And wonderful decorum. There's about 1,500 people davening in Rosh Hashanah.
Now, you davened there.
And they gave me the honor the last few years to daven Maariv in the middle night. You know, the second night the chazan doesn't daven. So they give me the honor, and the chazan asked me, and I enjoy it, to be in that shul, and I enjoy the service.
Oh, that must be some experience.
Yeah.
To be in Jerusalem also.
Yeah.
Well,
towns in Israel, there are very few chazanim the whole year. There is the brother of Naftali Hashtag, who is chazan in a synagogue in Tel Aviv called Hechel Meir. He's also a very, very, very good chazan. And I don't know in Haifa if there is a chazan. Maybe there is, but, you know, they daven without choir. And Tel Aviv, actually, at the big shul in Allenby, is a very large synagogue, where I heard this year davening Slichot, Moshe Stern, who davens in São Paulo, but because Rosh Hashanah was early this year, and it was 10 days, Slichos was 10 days before Rosh Hashanah, so he davened Slichos. The Slichos lasted 2 hours and a quarter with a nice big choir from that shul, but the shul now has no yearly chazan.
Uh-huh.
The reason probably is not because of the cost, but the shul is wrongly placed. This is in a business section of the city now, and the people don't live there around the shul. That would it doesn't work anymore.
And you also have the
Shoshana, they have a chazna choir.
Aha.
Shoshana, yeah.
But the eternal problem is a lot of people also don't want to sit and listen.
I told you in the beginning, this is the general attitude of the people today who daven, those who go to shul to daven. They have no patience to sit for 3-4 hours to listen to a chazan. Don't forget that in Israel, Sunday morning is like here, Monday morning, to go to work. And the only day of rest, Shabbat, Kedusha, Umnucha, is Shabbat. And they have other things to do. They want to have shiurim and learn and visiting Shabbat. And this usually services start in Israel at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock, and it finishes at 10:30. And I belong to a shul, for instance, in Rehovot, which is called the Berman Shul, but it was it's an American show. In English, because 99% of the people are born in the States or in England or in South Africa or in Australia, English-speaking people.
In Rehovot?
In Rehovot. But in Kollengau, in the Ishurim, most of them are in Ivrit, they all speak Ivrit. The children grow up, but down there for the Omot, you can daven Nusach Ashkenaz, Havara Ashkenaz, or Havara Sephardi. It doesn't matter. The fourth nobody. Everything goes. I like it. It's very nice. I enjoy that show very, very much. It suits me very well. It's very near me. This is near the Weizmann Institute. The shul, when it was founded, was called Bete Knesset HaMachon. But later on, the Berman, famous rabbi, Berman there, who was died at the age of 97, I think. He was a leader of the Mizrahi movement and a teacher. Now they have built up and this is also Yeshiva Tadarom in the same chaser, in the same yard there. And they now built a very big new teacher seminary, which existed there before. But now they built a new building, a fantastic, nice building, and it's already open. So from that point of view, I'm very happy that I found a very suitable, because this is a problem for newcomers, for newcomers who go to shul. Yeah, a Jew, a religious Jew who doubts, needs a shul.
Uh-huh.
And not every shul is fitting. You want a shul with people you can talk to, you can converse, you have memories together, and so on and so on. So I found the real shul, but it doesn't matter. Yerushalayim, for instance, Hechel Shlomo is a different character. I wouldn't say a different character. It is also English-speaking, because it's a lot of tourists. In Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, probably half of the Mitpalalim coming from England, or mostly from the United States, who have their permanent seats there. And they go there for the Yom Tovim to stay in the round hotels. Brick Plaza Hotel is opposite the shul.
Uh-huh.
And the shul also have a big catering downstairs.
Interesting.
Catering hall, which is connected inside with the Plaza Hotel. So the shul, a lot of rabbonim, retired rabbis, and when I remember the last years when Premier Minister Yitzhak Shamir used to come, but it's a for sure to shul. Earlier this year, Weizmann was there the first day. And
I'm glad to hear some of them go to shul.
Olmert, the mayor of they go other shuls. You see, in Israel, there is a synagogue in Yerushalayim, but the Knesset Shel Hanasi, where when Herzog was the president, the Nasi of Israel, he went to Bet Knesset Hanasi. You see, but in this is today, I would say, the official shul in Israel is Hechel Shlomo.
Uh-huh.
And there is an important affair. They need something very important. It's taking place in this shul. And there's also Goyim coming to visit this shul. And it is an honor to have a shul like this, and to be the chazan in that shul is a great thing. And it's very enjoyable and very fine to daven in that shul.
Well, Kirta Taube, you've certainly had a most fascinating life so far, starting in Poland and going through Austria and to Paris, the Holocaust. You survived, thank God. And
this is the goal, you know. I don't know if, unfortunately, this is the goal of our people. I didn't do it. I didn't plan it, what happened. God wanted it this way. And the great thing is that we survived. You know, I survived. My transport, who left in November 1943, Transi, consisted of 1,200 people, men, women, and babies, children, old and young. And 29 came back alive on this transport.
Wow.
It's all documented in the book published by Beata Klarsfeld. People in the know who she is.
Sure, sure, the famous Nazi hunter, yes.
Two books, and, you know, the Germans kept order. They had documents of everything. And in Israel, in the area of attack, in Gush Etzion, where my son lives, big andarta, a big monument, very large monument for the deported Jews of France. And all the pages of this book are on the plastic. You can read all the pages.
Wow.
So the transports, every transport the Germans brought there had a number. And my name is there on transport 62. You can see, you find my name in the year, in the place and year where I was born.
Wow, what an incredible story.
Yeah.
Yes. Are any of your children into Chazonis?
My children are not Chazonis. The oldest son lives in Gush Etzion. He's a pioneer. He lives in the kibbutz. He's very happy there. He's Baruch Hashem, five children there, Leah Nora. And my youngest is a daughter who lives in Opera. They were about 10 years ago, her husband, who was born also, he was born in Kibbutz Yavne. He was a shaliach of the Bnei Akiva of the Mizrahi movement in Chicago. And when they came back from the States, they didn't go back to Kibbutz Yavne. They got married in Kibbutz Yavne. But they went to Ofra.
Opera?
Opera.
Opera,
not Efrat.
Oh, okay. That's also, it's in Judea or Samaria?
This is about, in the so-called Shtachim. This is near Bethel, which many people know about. And this is a community of about 300 families, and they are growing. And the shul is packed. Always have a new shul about 2 or 3 years ago built. But you have never seen anything like it. The people, it's a working class people, young people. They work not only, they work everywhere in Yerushalayim, but they live there. Those homes are not so expensive than in Yerushalayim, you know. So they went to live in Ofra, and they are very happy. They're very happy. My daughter is a teacher. She has a teacher in English and in Hebrew. In Chicago, she was teaching in the at the Crown Girls High School Hebrew, and in Yerushalayim in the Hartman Institute, she teaches English. And my other son, the middle one, he lives in a town which is called Kiryat Sefer. This is a Haredi town, a new town. They are building it for, they say, 5,000 families. They have already 1,000 families there. This is exactly between Tel Aviv and Yerushalayim in the area of Modi'in. Modi'in, also he bought there an apartment about a year and a half ago. It cost less a little bit than Rehovot. And it's more spacious, and a lot of American guys live there too, in Ofra and in Kiryat Sefer. Yeah.
We've been talking about Chazonis, but I'm always compelled to ask about your feelings about the situation in Israel.
Politically speaking?
Yes, just the basic situation.
The country, in my opinion, is very divided now. I don't want to repeat this. You know the news here, and the same moment as it is in Israel, and we know all the news in Israel was going on in America. We have Kfalim television, we have CNN, and other, we have 30 stations, and the papers are the same. It's difficult for me to go into politics, but you can guess on which side I am.
Okay. And you're returning to Israel shortly, and you'll be teaching again at the...
The school is starting today, today the 10th. So next week, today a week, I will be going to school and teaching. Yeah. By the way, we have a director now. It's called Joel...
Alexander? No.
Charlie Bloch. Joe Bloch, Charles Bloch. You know Charles?
Oh, he was a cantor here in New York.
Yeah, I rented his singing radio for many years. Good friend of mine.
He has a son also who is a chazan.
Full time. Uh-huh. His son is the director, all good friend of ours, and we work together in harmony.
I didn't realize that he moved to Israel. That's recently.
Who?
Cantor Bloch.
No, Cantor Bloch didn't move to Israel. Charles Bloch lives here.
Oh.
But his son, Joel Bloch, lives quite, I would say, 6, 7, or 8 years he lives now in Israel.
Oh.
Years ago, he also started there a year or two in Israel, yeah.
I see. Well, I am grateful, as I'm sure my audience is, that you've taken the time to share your experiences with us, and we are going to be playing. It would take hours, of course, for me to play all of your wonderful selections, but for the remaining part of the show,
yeah.
We will be playing some of your outstanding recordings, and I know that we are very, very grateful that you've shared these thoughts with us, Cantor.
I'm staying now with Cantor Medvedev, and I'm sure you'll be sending him the tape of this concert, this broadcast, and he will transfer it to me.
Well, yes, and I'm sorry the last time I was in Israel, I just got so bogged down. I didn't have the chance to see you then last year, but with God's help, I will be there soon to see you in Israel.
If you tuned in late, this was a conversation with Cantor Shmuel Taube, who was just in this past week from Israel, returning to Israel tomorrow. Let's hear some of his excellent recordings. We'll begin with Shema Yisrael. Shmuel Taube, Shema Yisrael. Well, next year, Habet.
La haroi, ou la veille.
Just goes by much too quickly. I had planned to play several more recordings of Cantor Shmuel Taube. We'll have time for one more, and I'll certainly be playing more of his selections in the future. I'm sure that you found his interview, this conversation, fascinating as I did, and I'm grateful that Cantor Shmuel Taube took the time to share his thoughts and reminiscences with us. We'll conclude with his rendition of Ki Lekach Tov.
Thank you.
Magnificent. Cantor Shmuel Taube on his way to Israel, returning to Israel tomorrow. Thank you again, Chazan. Don't forget that next Sunday evening, November 20th at 7:30, Rabbi Avi Weiss will be giving a talk at Temple Beth Shalom at 193 East Mount Pleasant Avenue in Livingston, New Jersey. The subject is Black Jewish Relationship. What happened? For information, call 201-992-3600. Well, the forthcoming weeks, we'll be concentrating on Hanukkah. And don't forget, if you're looking for an excellent Hanukkah present for someone you love, start that person on his or her own private Jewish recording, Jewish music collection. They'll love you, and it's something that they'll cherish forever. Shalom, everyone.